So, as a cash practice, you have some unique needs, even more so now in our current economic environment that we found ourselves in. This is why we switched over to PT Everywhere for my practice, Athlete's Potential. Look, all in one place, we can manage patient schedules, home exercise plans, telehealth, and communicating back and forth with our clients, which has saved us a ton of time every single week, every single month, and every single day, not just myself, but my staff. And right now, you might just be a single practitioner, but eventually you want to grow into having multiple people and a true business. And what we wanted was a platform that could hold up to multiple practices, multiple clinicians, and scale with us as we go. So if you're just getting started, this is a great platform to take a look at. If you are growing and you're adding other people, this is a great platform that can grow with you and you won't have to worry about switching later. So if you're interested in saving some time and having everything in one place, head over to PTEverywhere.com and check out what they have to offer for your business and with their platform. So here's the question. How do physical therapists like us, who don't want to see 30 patients a day, who don't want to work home health, and have real student loans, create a career and life for ourselves that we've always dreamed about? This is the question, and this podcast is the answer. My name is Danny Matei, and welcome to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. What's up, guys? Welcome to the live stream, PT Entrepreneurs Group. If you are listening to this on the Facebook or on the podcast, welcome. I'm going to go ahead and hit record because I forgot to do this last time, actually. Boom. Got it. So, guys, we're going over local marketing today. Like, if you want more new patients, you got to listen to what we have to say. It's funny because Eve and I were actually catching up on how we started our practices, and we didn't even know what marketing really was. We're just kind of hustling and trying to figure it out. So if you're joining us live, let me pull this up real quick, actually. So I usually screw this up too. Eve, you got yours up?
Yep. It usually notifies me sometimes.
I'll make sure we can answer any of your questions as we get going, guys. As far as today, though, we're going over local marketing. And for Eve and I, we found a couple different channels that work really well. For us, we predictably get 15 to 30 new people per month into our cash practices, each of our practices, every single month without having to spend, you know, a dollar on paid ads to acquire those people. But it does take time and doing the right things. And it takes, being able to have the right skill set locally to be able to build relationships as well as educate people if that's the path that you want to go on, right? So, Eve, I think, you know, for you, you know, you took a different path than I did. You know, yours was more about relationships. So why don't you describe, like, how did you get your first people through the door?
Yeah, it's a good question. I feel like we're going to get a lot of people today just because of spring break, by the way, right? Like, I didn't realize it's spring break.
Is it?
Yeah.
Our spring break was last week. It always matches up with Masters week. So, but yeah, if it's spring break and you're watching us, why are you doing that? Why aren't you hanging out with your family? Do something fun.
They want to hustle, man. They're ready to get something.
trying to make a practice work. I get it.
yeah. So for sure, I had honestly no idea what marketing meant beyond in my insurance-based practice, which was purely go to the doctor's office, bring them lunch, right? And try to have a conversation, try to get past the front desk lady. Like, that was it. That was the only marketing tactic I honestly knew. It's the only thing that they really taught, that my boss even taught me. Like, none of this stuff, content, local marketing, it honestly didn't even matter. When we even tried to do workshops or stuff out in the community, it was just like, everybody hated it. It didn't bear any fruit. So when I started the cash practice, I had to rethink everything. And innately, in the beginning, all you have, I'm from the area, right? All I had was the people that I knew, right? And so I already was working out at CrossFit gym. I'd already seen a few patients just through word of mouth alone at another CrossFit gym. So what did I do? I honestly leveraged those relationships. I was not like you. Well, we can talk about it later, but I didn't like being in front of groups of people. I didn't like the idea of going and just cold calling places, just made me want to throw up. So what I did is I found the people that I already knew and that already knew me, And I just started like talking to them, taking them to coffee, inviting them to come in to see my practice. I just did a really, really good job. And I used the thing that I was most comfortable with. And that was one-on-one meetings, right? I was most comfortable just sitting down and talking to a patient. They're on the table. I'm sitting in the chair. So I tried to recreate that in the real world. I tried to recreate that where we just sat down for coffee, or, you know, it's like, hey, when's the gym closed? And like, can I just talk to you for a little bit? And I think my superpower was, and we've talked about this before, like I truly was curious and I truly cared about every single person I talked to. And I think that came through in a lot of those relationships and a lot of those conversations. You know, I learned later through books and Charisma Myth and everything else. So like, you're supposed to ask these empathetic questions and open-ended questions. But luckily I was doing that naturally, because I was just like, you know, how are you? Like, how's this business going? I also wanted just to learn more. So I was just like, how are you making this work? How are you filling your classes? Like, you know, like all this stuff, just asking questions. And lo and behold, that's like the best thing that you're supposed to do. That's how you nurture these relationships and get them to bear fruit, so they'll actually send you people and you know, develop deep relationships.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, you bring up a good point. I'd be interested too, if you're watching this live and you get like stressed out and anxious thinking about dropping into some random business or gym, type me in the comments. Cause I'd love to know. I think it's actually really common, to see people that get, you know, a lot of anxiety with these, like first interactions. I know for sure. You know, I got that as well. There's no doubt. And I wasn't, I'm not from Atlanta. So for me, it was very different because, these people didn't know who I was. They didn't know what I was trying to do. I didn't have, warm introductions or really anything like that. And, for me, I had a lot of stress with like dropping into places. It's funny. One of our mastermind members, he voxed me the other day and he was like, dude, I just sat in a parking lot for like 15 minutes and then drove away from some gym that he was going to drop into. Cause he was like so nervous about going in there, you know? Yeah. I boxed him back and I was like, hey man, I totally get it. But like where you feel confident, like what things you feel confident in him in. And, he said he feels confident with patients and he feels confident educating people. And for me, I felt the same way. So workshops and local education really made the most sense for me, because I think, you know, if you look at it this way, if you drop into somebody's gym randomly, that is hard. I've done it plenty of times. And you got, there's a right way to do it and there's a wrong way to do it. And even if you do it the right way, it doesn't always work out the way that you want. Yeah. So, you know, but I always felt comfortable educating, because I think there's a, even though you're in a different place, you are the subject matter expert. You're the one that is educating other people on the topic that you choose. So the confidence level that many people have in an environment like that is a lot better. They have a lot less stress typically than if they just are dropping in and there's so much unknown of like, well, where's the conversation going to go? What if they ask me this? Or what if they don't like me? Or what if, you know, they're busy or whatever it might be. Those are normal kind of like internal thoughts to have. But if that's enough to stop you from going somewhere, then maybe the education route makes more sense to you, because you probably will feel a lot more comfortable teaching than you are just random small talk. But to Eve's point, you know, asking other people questions about, you know, honestly, like being interested in what they have to say, it's such a huge difference maker than just going in there and being like, hey, I own Athlete's Potential. This is what we do. This is how we can help you. And they're like, dude, get the hell out of here. Like, I'm busy. I don't care. Right. Like, and I had to learn a lot of that stuff the hard way, 'cause I didn't know.
Why do you think everyone goes that route first? Right. Yeah. So like, I mean, we do it, we hear it all the time, like literally all the time. It's like, I went in there and I talked about how I could, you know, help their clients stay healthy. I talked about my manual therapy skills. Like, why do we think that's the best way to develop a referral source?
I think it's what we feel comfortable with, right? Like, I feel like everybody feels pretty comfortable about talking about themselves to some degree, and they feel a lot of discomfort with asking other people things, because, you know, you can sort of ramble and have no questions to ask somebody, and then you can just feel like you filled some time and you've checked a box. But to ask people intelligent questions, a really, really hard thing to do. You know, and it's the flow of a conversation and holding that can be really challenging too for some people. And we see this a lot with people that are a little more introverted. Ironically, I'm very much more introverted. I do not like going to parties. I do not like bars. I do not like big groups of people that I don't know. You know, like I just don't like that shit. And I also don't like going to somebody else's business that I don't know and trying to build, you know, establish rapport. It's very hard to do, for me, at least. Other people, they're just ninjas with it. Like I see this with my daughter and my son. My daughter, she makes friends so easily. Like we're out camping and snowboarding and Maggie's just like, all of a sudden she's like six friends that she's made. And we're like, where the hell did that come from? And you know, my son is like, how does she do that? Like it's some sort of, you know, ninja trick. And I told him, I said, Jack, when Maggie goes up to somebody, all she does is ask them questions about them. Where'd they get that shirt? What kind of toys do they like to play with? Like she's seven, right? So she's asking, all she does is asking questions to them about what they're interested in. That's it. And people love that. And Jack is typically telling some long-winded story that, you know, after like 2 minutes, people are like, okay, I'm going to leave. Yeah. And,
therefore that he just won. Against
exactly. And so I brought up to him, I was like, do you notice a difference? He was like, wow, that's the difference. I go, that is the major difference in what Maggie's doing versus what you're doing. Now you have an opportunity to practice that. Right. So asking questions and having other people engage with the things that they're interested in, I think is just the most important thing you can do in these local settings.
Yeah. I mean, you said it when I asked you the question, like, why do we do this? Is because we like to talk about ourselves. So you're basically just flipping that on its head and giving the other person the opportunity to talk about themselves. Yeah. Right. And yeah. That's it, right. And like, I've said it time and time again, even with the PTs that work for us, made moves. Like, what do I do in these conversations? I'm like, just get them to talk about themselves, ask as many questions as possible. Right. And, some people, you know, that are a little more introverted and doesn't come as naturally, practice. You know what I mean? Like, you know, one thing that is like absolute respect for you, because we talked about this, you know, when you present and you do workshops, like you practice it like crazy, right? Like you, it's basically, and it doesn't come off like the back end. It's not like you're reading a script, but you basically could read the script if you needed to, right? And that's like when the mindset of going in there, it's like the number one thing, I think this is what Maggie does too. You just go in with confidence, right? You just like, you're just confident, right? And I think that's kind of sometimes it's difficult to fake, if not kind of impossible, right? Yeah. But you got to go in with confidence, right? Just go in there and be, and whatever that means to you, like, how do you create that confidence? Like those six books.
Well, let's chat about that for a second, because I it's not something that I'm naturally like, I'm not a naturally super confident individual. Right. Like it's just something I've had to work really hard on. And in particular, when I went into the Army, they will eat you alive if you are just like, if you're not confident. They're, now you can't be overconfident or arrogant, because in that setting, you're talking about real life implications of, you know, really bad things that could happen to people when somebody is not willing to admit when they're wrong about something. Right. So there's this fine line that you have to learn with, you know, confident, but not arrogant, and being able to also, you know, admit when you're wrong. Real quick, if anybody's on here live and you have a local marketing question as we go through this, type it in the chat so we can make sure we answer it while you're on here. But as far as confidence goes, the charisma myth is a big one that is, I reference all the time. It's one of my favorite books.
Yep.
You know, and I think it's that kind of, I think breaks down some frameworks of how you can kind of work on building that. And some of it has to do with, like, I do visualization stuff before I present. I mean, I do breathing work. I try to think of, like, you know, consistent things that I want, you know, to have top of mind before I go and I present. But don't get me wrong, I get nervous as hell before I have to say anything in public. Dude, I'll get nervous before I have to present in front of, like, or just introduce myself in front of six parents I don't know. Like, it's not, if you're listening to this and you're like, oh, it's easy for you. No, it's not. It's fucking hard every time that I do it. Like, I have legit discomfort with it. It's just something that I've worked on to where the point where I didn't want it to hold me back. And then when I started teaching for Mobility Wad, what I found was I was reading The Talent Code. And The Talent Code is a great book because it breaks down how basically anybody can get better at anything. And it comes down to repetition, deliberate practice, and struggle. Like, this is really important. No one is good at anything initially. I mean, you might be somewhat better at certain things than others, but practice gives you confidence. Reps gives you confidence. Like practicing scenario-based things over and over again, practicing whatever you're presenting, you know, having somebody in your family or a friend ask you questions to help you like handle objections or whatever you'd call them in person at workshops. I did all this stuff. My wife hated doing it. She hated it. I'd be like, hey, ask me a question. She's like, I don't know what to ask you. I'm like, okay, you ask me this and then I'll say what my answer would be back. Like it's you can get better at many of these things. Repetition and practice over and over and over again builds confidence through reps, period. It's any skill. You get better. You want to play pickup basketball with your friends? You go practice, you know, with your non-dominant hands, shooting from different angles, passing, you know, running wind sprints, whatever, before you go out there. I bet you're a shitload more confident than if you just show up, lace up your shoes and probably break your ankle whenever you first get out there, right? Like anything is better with reps and practice.
Yeah. Man, we're going to go on a lot of tangents today. I can already tell. So three things to echo there. One is not only practice, but like do the actual thing, right? Like what was my first ever local marketing meeting like? Terrible. What were my first 10 to 20 to 30 probably like? Not ideal. What were your first couple of workshops? Do you know what I mean? Like awful, right? And so like you also just need to go do the thing, right? Like the perfect example. Both kids trying to learn how to tie their shoes. Ugh. Right? So difficult.
First.
And I could, YouTube videos, grandma taught them, Amy taught them, I taught them. And you know what eventually just got it to click? They just practiced.
Peer pressure too. Be like, oh, Timmy's tying his shoes. Shit, I got to learn how to tie my shoes.
Exactly. It was just trying it over and over again. It wasn't like this magical thing that I need to tell them that finally it clicked. It was actually just like pure repetition. And it's just like, cool. Now I got it. Like, awesome. Like Liam was like, oh, I finally got it. Like nobody was even around him. I was like, what are you talking about? You finally figured it out. This is the best thing ever. And that's just it. Like, just do it. Just try and fail and struggle. I love that you use that word struggle. You've got to struggle through it again and again. And like, that's why like we're resilient people at this point, because we just know how to struggle and we're just really, really okay with just getting punched in the face and the stomach and, you know, the back of the head.
Yeah. You get beat up a lot. It sounds like with local marketing, you know, I mean, and to bring it back to the talent code, in the talent code, they reference that an increased amount of myelination occurs with struggle, with failure, right? So think of it this way. Before we had, you know, GPS and iPhones with, you know, maps on it, the fastest way to learn yourself or learn a new city, like how to get around, was to get lost, was to just like, don't go that way. Oh, that's a dead end. Not going there again. You know, and like that is actually the best way to learn, you know, how to get around a new city. And, you know, the struggle, the going the wrong direction is just as important as going the right direction, because you actually learn habitually and on neurologically of what to do, what not to do. And pain is a good teacher. Like, I think people, they try to shy away from it, but like I've had some like really uncomfortable experiences with local marketing with people that, you know, that I've met with. It was just like a terrible fit. And, you know, you're not going to meet the exact right person every single time with your, you know, local relationships, or maybe do a workshop to an audience that isn't the right fit, or, hey, one person shows up, or, hey, nobody shows up. Cool. Lesson learned. Market better next time, right? You know, how do you get those filled up? How do you have better partnerships to where people are showing up? You know, maybe the content is no good. You know, these are all things that you're going to learn in many cases, you know, the hard way. But with confidence, the other thing to kind of bring it back to this, number one is repetitions. Number two is having a deep, deep understanding as to why you're putting yourself in these uncomfortable positions in the first damn place. And I get this on, you know, I don't really do too much in the local marketing side of our practice, but like, I mean, the amount of content that, you know, that I put out, that you put out, that it's not like everybody agrees with what we have to say. In fact, many people in the profession really don't like what I have to say. Yeah. And you can see it on social media. You can see it, you know, with emails that I get, things like that. And, you know, it's not always the nicest stuff. I get plenty of good things as well. But, you know, if you don't know why you're doing that and you have some resistance, you're going to quit. And for many of you, it's as simple as this. Like, does your desire to want to have success in private practice, be able to work for yourself, be able to work with people on the terms that you want to work with them on, make the money that you want to make, have the time and financial freedom that you do want, does that outweigh the discomfort you have to get over to be able to develop local relationships, to educate people locally, to build referral sources in a local service business? It's almost impossible to do this without local marketing. Is the discomfort from that and avoiding that better than being able to live out, you know, the dream that you want with your own business? And if the answer is yes, then just quit. Just go back to work for somebody else. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just not the right fit for you.
Yeah. I feel like we always bring it back to the whole starts with why thing, right? Because this is just one out of many things where you're going to encounter an insane amount of resistance and discomfort. Like, local marketing is honestly like one of the easiest things to come over beyond, like, you know, internal HR issues, right? Or like, yeah, somebody attacking you on Instagram. You know what I mean? Like, so if you don't have this big driving force, whether it's mission-driven as a company, right? Or mission-driven as a person, where I just want to create a better life for myself. Like, look at Roger's story, right? Like, he knows his why, right? He does not want to end up or have his kids end up where he was, you know, right? When he grew up, right? Like, he will go through any discomfort, and we see it in the way he works, right? So you've got to have probably both, in my opinion, but definitely at least one that's really, really driving you to push past this stuff.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that people take for granted is this idea that they can just become, you know, slick digital marketers and then their business is going to explode because of it. Now, if you're selling t-shirts, or you're selling some dropship thing, or maybe you have something online, you know, that very well might make a huge difference in your business. With digital marketing, and we've done a lot of this, right? Like, I the first Facebook ad I ran was like the end of 2014. All right. So it's not like this is the first time that we've done it. Here's what I can tell you. I think it sounds cooler. Like, people are like, oh, I don't have to go teach a workshop, or I don't have to go meet somebody, or I don't have to go to a local running, you know, like a 5K and talk to people. You don't have to do that with those things. But what you still have to do is produce content, which is still educating. You're still, you know, consistently putting your ideas out there, which people will still disagree with, and you're still going to get some of that. So for some people, they have issues there. And the other thing is, even with the people that you do get in those channels, because to this day, we still run ads, we still use digital marketing, but I'll take two local referral patients over five, you know, Facebook or Google patients any day of the week, because there's so much better people to work with. They're so much easier to work with. They're more likely to refer us more people. And, you know, if the internet goes away, we're still fine. Like, that's actually an incredibly safe feeling in a lot of ways. And then during the pandemic, during 2020, when all this shit went down, here's what happened. People with strong local business relationships and strong partnerships, they had people wanting to help support them. They wanted to get through this together. People that were isolated and they were just doing things by themselves, a lot of them struggled mightily during this time because they had no support system, no local community of other entrepreneurs that were trying to help each other kind of get through it. I think it's incredibly important, not just on the business side, but also for your own, you know, sort of well-being, as well as the community aspect that many of us don't get much of as entrepreneurs. I think it can be incredibly healthy for you to start to get involved with other businesses, the right businesses. And of course, you're going to meet some of the wrong ones along the way, but you're going to meet some great people as well.
Yeah. I mean, I said it in the anticipation post, like, you want to bulletproof your business. You want to be impenetrable to competition. It's these deep local marketing relationships,
right?
Right. It's just going to be really, really hard for anybody to come in and like take over if you've got 15, 20, 30 solidified relationships with gyms, doctors, personal, you know, relationships, whatever. It's just going to be super hard, right? Because, you know, just as you said, using our own neurology, right? Like, for us, with as far as like myelination and like, you know, keep pushing forward, it's the same thing here. Like, we were built as tribes. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is who we are as people, right? So as soon as you're part of the tribe, it's going to be really hard for anybody else to come in and take your spot as this tribe member, right? And can you use that to your advantage? Absolutely. Does it take a ridiculous amount of time, energy, focus, and effort? Absolutely, right? But will it pay off in the long run? Yes, right? And does it get easier? Yes. You know, we've been doing it now for, you know, 5-10 years consistently in our local business. And it's just going to be hard for other people. And that's a good thing.
Well, it also takes you. So what happens is really interesting because I, you know, moving to a city where I didn't know anybody, what happened was is I was just like scrappy as hell to try to get in front of anybody. And that's what I did for years. But along the way, I met so many people and interacted with so many people that at a certain point, I ended up becoming a connector of other people. So for me now, it's not necessarily that I'm reaching out to people for warm introductions for things that I, you know, people I might want to meet. It's the other way around where people are reaching out to me like, hey, do you know so-and-so? Or hey, who's a good fit for this? Or so all of a sudden you go from somebody that's just trying to develop a local presence to somebody that has a trusted opinion of things in a local setting. And that puts you in a completely different place as far as your ability to build these relationships to you know, get into other businesses or gyms or communities or whatever you might want to do because you have credibility. And it's not something that happens overnight. I think this is where people get really frustrated. And I wish it was as easy as just pushing the blue button on Facebook and 50 people show up. It's just not. Even if you go that route, it's such a complex thing. It changes all the time. You know, it's you have to know what you're tracking. I mean, I was in a digital mastermind that was very expensive for a year, and it was all about digital marketing, all about building funnels, all about like tracking things. And even after that year, I was like, dude, I barely dip my toe in the water of what the heck people are doing here. So I think you can simplify it in many ways and make it really work for you. But you know, when we look at local marketing, it's like planting a seed. And I think this is what people want. They want, hey, I push this button, I get 50 new patients that show up versus, hey, I plant this seed and over the course of the next 20 years, it pays off for me because I have developed this relationship. I built this thing, you know, and you're not going to like kill it as soon as you plant it, right? Like you want to build something that's going to bear fruit for you, you know, that's going to grow and bear fruit for you every year. And that's local marketing. That's relationships. That's workshops. You know, it's what's interesting about workshops. I'm a huge fan of them because I built my business off it. And I've had people as far out as 2 years after a workshop come in and eventually see us for something that they had, you know, that was wrong with them at the time when they saw us at the workshop, 2 years. But like the number of workshops we've done, the number of people that we've met, the number of people that haven't even come to see us, but remember us from something that we did that send us people every single month, you know, it's just like we could do no marketing, zero. And we would still end up with probably 20 plus people a month that are just coming in because of all of the good reciprocity that we've built, all of the workshops, all the relationships, and people now talking this up because we've got a chance to now work with thousands and thousands of people in the city of Atlanta.
Yeah, you're going to have to pay the man, right? Like you're going to have to pay the man like through time and energy or a bunch of money, right? Like I don't care. There's no way if it's digital space or it's local space, right? So like, you know, and when we talk about local marketing, it's still part of our three-pronged approach, right? So like the marketing trident that I talked about, it's still local marketing, I think is the tip of the spear. It's the number one thing you want to focus on. And then now digital content and digital ads just become supplements to that, right? So Just like you, I really haven't, I've been really focusing on PT Biz, honestly, for the past year plus, and really taking more of a coaching, you know, visionary role in my practice. And we track this. We've consistently averaged 30 new patients month in, month out, even through the pandemic with next to no local marketing. We still try to do one or two workshops every single month, but that's basically it. Like pretty minimum effort. And that is amazing for me to see, right? So that kind of shows me that I'm not going to go anywhere, that my floor, you know, is really, really low. So when we like summarize this, you know, we got a question, we can answer it here in a minute. The mindset behind local marketing, number one is to be confident. Number two is to truly give a shit, right? To be genuine and authentic and curious, right? And then number three is to be patient, right? Like it doesn't happen. It's so funny when I get people to do like, you know, local marketing sprints, you're like, why isn't it working yet? I'm like, it's honestly 90 days on average, which is not that long. You know what I mean? Right. Like it's still, it's like, I need new patients right now. Like, yeah, you do, but those are not the kind of patients you want. You want the ones that are going to come in after they see you and hear you and talk to you. Those are the kind of patients that last forever. Those are the kind of patients that refer their friends. Those are the patients that come in and they just trust you and they're going to hang around forever.
Yeah. And, you know, to your point, if you guys are, you know, listening to this and you want some better structure around your marketing, just type leads in the comment and we'll have one of our team members shoot you over a copy of our marketing trident where we go over our kind of three pronged approach to how we get, you know, cash paying clients every single month. Just type leads in the comment and we'll send it out or comments. We'll send it out to you. So Chris, yeah, has a question. He says, can you guys touch on doing recurring free treatment in a gym for their members slash coaches for an afternoon versus doing workshops and or speaking? So, so I've done both. And I think you have to be very careful with how much free, like time, how much free work you're essentially, you know, giving out to people. Now we do work with some coaches, some gym owners or some other local business owners on a recurring basis as like visits monthly for free. But they're also people we have really good relationships with. It's people that consistently we kind of refer back and forth. And it's actually a really great way for us to continue to establish that local cadence by just having them come to us. We could do something for them that's beneficial, but we get that time on our time, you know, as well. You know, so that's actually a great way to do local marketing with the right people. Really important for you to keep that in mind. Like, are these people beneficial to your business? Not necessarily just, you know, you sponsor some local CrossFit athlete that's kind of good and they send you nobody, right? Like, you know, it might be a bad relationship. You got to be able to track that and see if there's anything positive coming from you, whether it be, you know, patients, whether it be other connections, credibility. In some cases, we see people that sponsor athletes for that. So I'm not a big fan of treating people for free at gyms. I actually think that's a really, it sends a bad sign to people as to like you value your time.
See you after that, right? Like I don't, you know, that'd be really tough sell, right? You're almost like creating.
Yeah. Well, I always think to myself, like, you know, if you're a clinician, you should be trying to become the best clinician in the world. Like legitimately every day, you should try to be better and better at what you do. Now, if you were really that good at what you do, would you be treating people for free in a gym in an afternoon? Probably not, right? Because if you were that amazing, people would be like flocking to you. And I know when we're just getting started, it feels like you're doing something. And in some ways you are kind of getting yourself out there, but I would much rather teach a free workshop and have 10 people there than have, you know, somebody show up and me, you know, needle their calf for like 15 minutes. The only caveat to that I would say is if you're going to do something individually, I prefer to do like movement screens or like movement evaluations and just show people how bad they are at certain things to prove that you know what you're talking about and then get them to come in to see you. But I wouldn't treat people for free because I think that it's hard to dig yourself out of that hole.
Yeah. I mean, we see a lot of people have a lot of success doing two things. And one would be the screens, right? Which are very basic. Really no treatment, not even like giving them exercises, right? Because I get all the time, what happens is even if they do too much of a screen is to, they already have everything they need. They already have stuff to work on and they just go do that, right? And then they think that's it, right? And you'll get the opportunity to kind of show them that there's more, right? So like, you know, it's even, when I go back and I had no idea what a value ladder was, right? And so essentially, you're basically giving them too much too soon, right? And you need to think about the value ladder. So right now, the first step is to get them to know, like, and trust you. And that's just giving them a basic subjective exam, maybe one assessment or two, right? And be like, hey, I need to see you so I can actually solve your problem. I don't want to just, you know, give you a couple things for just symptom relief. I want to solve your problem long term, right? Yeah. And doing it that way, we've seen that has typically a better ROI.
Oh, I don't know if you got a Vox from, I think it was Chris and Ross the other day. Ross sent me a message and they went 10 for 10 on a weekend evaluation of a movement evaluation, you know, 15, 20 minutes to evals, 10 for 10 with people that they...
That's incredible.
Great. Yeah. And the thing is, so here's what you got to keep in mind. If you're going to go this route and you're going to do evaluations, like, you know, movement evaluations, movement screen, whatever it might be, you want to create clarity, not just give them a couple things to do that may give them a little bit of symptomatic relief. This is something that I actually made this mistake many times early on, is I would stay after workshops and I would spend 15, 20 minutes with people showing them all kinds of shit and they would never come see me. because they thought, oh, cool, this guy just showed me everything that I need. And it was a disservice to them and to me because they didn't actually get the outcome that they wanted. It was a huge amount of time. You know, sometimes I would be at workshops like 3 hours sometimes, you know, just answering everybody's questions in detail. And I think the most important thing you can do is create clarity around, you know, things that are incomplete mechanics, potentially that are causing their problems, and letting them realize that you know how to address it. You can isolate what's going wrong and that you work with people in that capacity, and that you're a pretty sure bet that you can help them out, because most people have been burned by the healthcare community in general. Ironically, I was out in Denver. We were having dinner with my cousin and her husband, and I was telling her about like our practice. She was like, oh my God, I would love to go to somebody where I could just pay them and I know exactly what I owe instead of going through insurance and then fighting with them for, you know, 2 months. And I started laughing. I was like, that was not the way it was 8 years ago. And now like people are looking for that stuff because they want simplicity. They want clarity. They want to know that they're going to the right person and not deal with this crazy medical system we found ourselves in. So I think we're all in a good spot to do that. But when you go and do these local workshops, these local, you know, screens, whatever it might be, create clarity, create simplicity for people that will move them to want to work with you versus just give them stuff that you think is going to build like reciprocity. If nothing else, they're just probably not going to do it because they don't have enough buy-in.
Yeah. It honestly makes sense clinically, right? Should you even give them a bunch of stuff if you really aren't really sure what's going on? And then also makes sense from a business aspect, right? Like it just doesn't get them in your door, right? So it's really cool for me when those things align, right? Like, oh man, not only doing the ideal thing here clinically and ethically, but now I'm actually doing the best thing for my business. And you'd be really surprised how those things line up most of the time, right? We're just kind of, you know, sometimes just not looking at it the right way, right? Like, and Chris, you're not necessarily doing anything bad. We've all done those things before. I don't think there's anything wrong with it, right? So, but I want to make sure those people come in and get their problem solved forever, right? And like, yeah, that's typically coming in to see you for 6-10 visits, you know, like get them in and actually solves a problem.
Well, and there's definitely examples of where people do that successfully. I mean, that's they call that a variation of drug dealer marketing, right? So you're giving them a taste and then you want, you know, want them to come back continually to work with you. We actually see this a lot more in like the chiropractic kind of community where they'll do, you know, adjustments at a farmer's market or whatever. But you're also attracting people that, in my opinion, are really not the best people to work with. So you got to understand, like, you don't want to work with everybody. Many people are a huge pain in your ass. Many people will like nickel and dime you. Many people will not see value in what you do. And it can just be really exhausting. And it just like zaps your energy versus finding the right people, people that want to invest in themselves, people that want to have a relationship with a provider, and they don't want the cheapest route. They don't want the free thing. Like they actually are off put by that. Those are the people that I want as many as possible of, because I know they're going to be more enjoyable for my staff to work with. They're going to be a way higher lifetime value. They're way more likely to send somebody our way, friends, family members, right? So we get more people like them that come through. It's this idea, like there's a book called Book Yourself Solid. And the guy talks about this term of your red velvet rope policy, right? So, you know, if you're going to a club, like I know much about that. I think the last time I was at a club was many years ago, but the clubs that I went to were not, there's no velvet rope, you know, some like country Georgia, South Georgia town. But anyway, the idea is, all right, the velvet rope, the guy letting you in doesn't just let anybody in. And for your own business, your own clients, you want to have criteria for the people that you want to work with. And that's your velvet rope policy. And what that does, it's interesting. You would think, oh, I'll see less people. Yeah. Initially, you will, but you'll see the right people, and that will snowball into more and more and more of those, which is what you want. So being selective about people you work with, I think, is also just as important.
Yeah. I mean, we see it all the time, right? Like everyone's like, oh, I can treat anybody, right? Like my marketing message needs to be more broad, right? We're kind of a little off topic, but at the same time, like focus on your niche, focus on your right people, right? Like, you know, we've had all kinds of people come into my practice, right? And like, I'll give you two sides of the spectrum. We've got one person who came in for like a dry needling kind of like promo that we did, came in, said nothing to our PT, took his shirt off, laid down on the table and said, let's get to work. Right? Like probably not my ideal client. That was not a comfortable situation, nor did that person come back. And we have other people, qualified, word of mouth, somebody referred us, saw our content, came in, you know, and sat down, says like, I need to make some big health changes here. Like, I'm stressed out. I'm not sleeping enough. My knee hurts. Running is really important to me. Like, you know, I'm ready to commit to something.
Yeah. Yeah. And
who do you work with? Which one, you know?
Dude, I think you bring up a good point. And this is why I think both of us are a little bit less heavy on the digital marketing side, because, you know, if you're going to do it right, it's really about long-term relationship development. I don't think it's any different than the local marketing side. It's just online, right? Yeah. So what you're doing is you're trying to educate, you're trying to clarify things for the people that you want to work with. If you're just doing offers, discounted front-end offers, and that's all where you're getting your clients from, all you're going to do is get people that are looking for discounted front-end offers who historically are just not the best people to work with in comparison to people that are looking for an expert, you know, that are looking for a trusted source of somebody to have a relationship with to help with their health long-term. So, you know, if you're going to go the digital side, you have to be able to produce content for the specific person that you want to attract. And that's just really understanding your client, your avatar, really, really well, which you have to do locally as well. And what I like about the local side is, you know, once we figured out in person, it's like, I'm not a stand-up comedian, but I've heard comedians talk about how they test things out, right? Like they go and they test things out in person. They're not going to do a Netflix special before they've tested the heck out of a bunch of stuff and found out what didn't work and what did work. And then all of a sudden they put that up and it's evergreen, right? So for me, I always found when I did local teaching, local education things, whether it was coaches or with potential clients, I learned a lot about what made sense, what didn't make sense in real time. And I was able to adjust that. So when we started to produce content, we started to share ideas and leverage that more via paid ads, it worked so much better because I already knew what worked and what didn't work because I was in front of those people and I was getting real-time feedback on it, which was incredibly valuable.
100%, right? Like you can do it in a digital format. Like I feel like we're hating on digital stuff. Like Jared, sorry, man. But
I do it every month. That's the thing. We do it, but it's not also like a, you know, push a button and then this is what you get. And even if you do get that, you got to understand they're less qualified people than if you have strong local marketing. It's that simple. It's just, It is so much more important to have a strong local presence, to get strong word of mouth, predictable word of mouth. That's the thing. Most people are like, oh, I get all my clients from word of mouth. But can you predict how many of those are going to happen per month? Because you have a system in place to get word of mouth referrals, because you're doing local marketing. You know, if you do a workshop, you get this number of people, you get this number of leads. Huge difference between closing your eyes and praying and hoping somebody comes your way because maybe somebody randomly tells their friend about you versus predictably knowing if I see this number of people, this number of folks are going to send me other people and this is how many clients I can expect from that.
Yeah. I mean, we've built so many systems in place, right? We know minimum effective dosage. We know best practices. We know how to facilitate motor mouth with our patients. We know how to have these conversations and how often to follow up with them, right? Like we've basically fine tuned this process to make it honestly as effective with as little time investment as possible, right? And like, and that is what we want, right? Like it is time intensive. It's emotionally exhausting, but there's a way to do it the right way. There's a way to do it to get from point A to point B as fast as possible. I got a quick question I want to circle to, because this is honestly, I'm interested. So you were in Atlanta, you didn't know anybody. Like, how did you start some of those initial conversations to get workshops set up in the first place, right? Like, I had like a superpower, man. I just knew somebody. Like, warm intros was my jam, right? Or like, you know, dropping into gyms was kind of my jam. Like, what did you do?
So, okay. So I had an office in a CrossFit gym called CrossFit North Atlanta. And Travis Harkey is the guy that owns it. He's the gym owner. And when I got there, I was a couple things. One thing helped me a lot. And I did do this strategically. And not everybody's going to have this opportunity. So about 6 months after I got there, I set up my own CrossFit movement mobility trainer course at that gym. And so I had to get there. Okay. They weren't hosting those at the time. So at about 6 months in, I hosted one and there was about 40, 50 people that came, to that workshop locally. And it was a CrossFit, you know, certification for a day. So there were people, some of them were from Atlanta. Many of them were from like kind of all over the Southeast, whatever, but that was very helpful because I did meet some people there that turned into really important relationships for me down the road.
You created that opportunity.
Yeah, for sure. Right. So, and I did that intentionally because I was like, dude, I've got to teach one here because it's going to help me meet these other people. But for that first 6 months, what happened was I just was trying to improve sections of what I was teaching for that certification and testing those things to help improve my ability to teach at these live events that I was doing, not really knowing I was going to get a bunch of, patients from it. So I brought it up. First of all, with Travis, I was like, hey man, can we, you know, Kelly does something like this in San Francisco. People can bring like a bottle of wine and like, we'll just, you know, we'll make it a nice social event. And that's the very first thing that I did. I actually did it on lower back. And people were hammered, dude, like wasted. They showed up with a shot ski. Like I hadn't seen a shot ski in forever. And I didn't know what I got myself into because I couldn't even drive home. I was so drunk by the time that the workshop was over because they had me taking tequila shots. And I was like, I guess I got to do this for the business, whatever. So like I had to wait a really long time just to be able to safely drive. But anyway, that was the first event that I did, but everybody had such a good time at it that we set up a series. So I actually did three or four workshops that first month at that gym. And then from there, members from other gyms actually came and they actually put me in touch with their coaches, their gym owners to teach similar ones at their facility. So just from that one gym, I got probably connected to 4 or 6 other gyms that then we set up series with. So I look back at it as like, I think I taught, I don't remember, 8, maybe 9 workshops in June, the first month that we were open.
Oh, dang.
In July, I taught at least the same amount, if not more. In August, I actually only taught a couple because I was out of the country for like 3 weeks. I was teaching internationally. But even like when I came back, I was just like, I had a wait list basically by that point for people wanting me to teach. So what the other thing that happened was I had so many people requesting these workshops that I started charging for them. So I would charge $250 just to show up. And the way that I would do it was they would charge $10 for somebody to come. And anything that they made, you know, over that, the gym just kept it. And so they just paid me $250. And most of them at least broke even. We'd have at least 20 or so people there. I think the most we ever had was like 48. And so we had just a ton of people show up, which is way too many to have an effective workshop. But that's the way that it started for me, was just literally just teaching locally, just trying to do a really good job. And then other people being like, wow, this is awesome. Can you do one of these at our gym? I think, you know, so-and-so would like it. And that's literally how it started. It was all very much grassroots with me just teaching at this one gym and then getting connected to a bunch of people outside of that. And I would teach anywhere, dude. I would drive an hour and a half outside of town and teach. Like I would not do this today because frankly, I just don't want to drive that far to teach somebody I'm probably never going to see. But at the time I didn't know. I just was like trying to get better at teaching.
Yeah. I mean, you created that, right? Like, I still think that's the kind of emphasis there, right? Like nobody was really, this is when workshops, you know, within our community, it's more of a thing. There's more workshops going on. Back then, there was no such thing as workshops, right? Like there was some stuff, right? And so, man, dude, 8 to 9 a month sounds super intense. Let alone teaching across the country or internationally.
It was a lot, but honestly, in this first 6 months, and I think this is I get this with people too, that they're like, I don't know how to build like a local presence. You know, I'm like, listen, man. If you teach 6 to 10 workshops a month for the first 6 months, you'll never have to worry about your business ever again. Like you will build so many connections, so much word of mouth presence, and so much reciprocity with people that they're going to have this word of mouth presence with all. Because you have to think the net effect. Let's say there's 10 people at a workshop, right? So those 10 people, if you do an amazing job, and this is actually, I think, where people miss the mark, because they're like, no, I'm really good at what I do. Or no, like I'm a great clinician. Like people love working with me. Do they? If you were that great, you wouldn't have to market yourself. Like keep that in mind, not to make anybody feel bad, but you may not be as good as you think. How can you improve your customer experience? How can you improve your communication? How can you improve the outcomes that you get? You know, all of these things, like as you get better at that, it feeds the business as well. So keep in mind, like you can be an amazing marketer. Like you can be the greatest restaurant marketer in the world, but if your burrito sucks, nobody's coming back. All right. So that you have to keep that in mind. So making sure that when you get somebody through the door, you over deliver, you're like, you know, hey, this early on, if somebody had a problem, like I just gave my cell phone number. I have so many patients that text me still like, hey, can I get back in for my ankle? I'm like, dude, we have an office manager now. Here's where you go to get a visit. Like, cause I don't, you know, that's not me. But like, that's what I did. I was like, hey, if you have a problem, text me. I'm gonna text you tomorrow and see how things are going. Like, no one did that. And I didn't know we weren't supposed to do that. I just was like, this is what I think I would want somebody to do for me. And, you know, so like that is huge. But the net effect of those 10 people that come is how many people do they know? Okay. Like, are they at another gym? Are they in some sort of club? Or does their coworker have back pain? You know, like how many people do they know? And that 10 people, the net effect of that is actually massive. Now you do that and there's 10 people that show up four times a month. Let's say you do four workshops, 40 people plus all the net people that they know outside of it, the relationships, the loose connections, all of a sudden your network expands dramatically. And if I moved to another city, the first thing that I would do is I would teach my ass off everywhere I possibly could. I would teach anywhere, everywhere, as much as I possibly could. And within 6 months, I would be full.
Yeah. I mean, I love just like simplifying things and narrowing things down. I would say number one is create opportunities, right? You did that through workshops. I did that with dropping into gyms and leveraging my personal network, right? Like I still remember so vividly, kind of one of the first times I ever did goal setting, you know, back in the day, we kind of created a list of all my local marketing contacts. And I filled this giant whiteboard that was literally like 6 feet, maybe more, 6 to 7 feet by like 3 feet wide, and filled the entire thing. Like I was like, when is this going to stop? But it was just like one connection to the other. And before you knew it, you've got this, like, I can only imagine how big it is now, right? And I'm still meeting new people. I'm still getting these connections. I don't have to try anymore. It's like, oh man, you should talk to this person. Like, you know, we have this local marketing podcast. We've been interviewing somebody weekly for what, 2 to 3 years now? I can't even, right? Like, it's crazy. So create the opportunities for yourself, over deliver, right? And then the third one, I think, is just to like hustle. If you're just starting out, like it's, some of it is just like, you know, hustle. Like I say this to a lot of people in the beginning, it's a shotgun approach. You're just going to blast out and kind of just as many as possible. And as you get, you know, a little better at this, and you understand who your people are, it's going to be a little bit more of a sniper, right? Like in the end, you're just got like dream 10 or whatever. You're still meeting new people, but it's going to be probably a little bit more targeted. In the beginning, you're just kind of, I just want to digitally as well as locally, I just want everyone to see my face everywhere.
Yeah, dude, I totally agree. You know, and Jenny has a good question here. Jenny Wallace asks, what are the topics that you teach and what did best? So Jenny, you know, not to just hard plug this, but like, in our Rainmaker coaching program, we actually give you the three best workshops, the exact exercises, the flow, how much time in between, like that we found for three areas, the shoulder, the knee, and the lower back. Now you can title them different things, but the vast majority of people that we see are going to have problems in those three areas to some degree. So those are the ones that have done the best. But I've done, you know, I have done workshops on all kinds of stuff. Like a sneaky one that works really well is sleep education. So I've done a lot of sleep like optimization presentations for tech companies, especially over in 2020. I did a bunch of these because people were looking for something to fill time where their staff could like be together and they would have like a guest presenter, and it wasn't just like a, you know, whatever, a PowerPoint about their business. And so I did these for a lot of local tech companies, and it was great for our company, because here's what I didn't really think this would lead to patients, but people that are interested in improving their sleep generally are interested in improving their overall health. And if you can get somebody to buy in on sleep improvement, they're pretty damn interested in getting healthier. So that's actually worked really well. But it's also bombed for me. I did a down regulation workshop at a CrossFit gym one time, and it was like a 45 minute long power nap. And then everybody was just like super tired and they went home. So that didn't work so well. She also asked, also other than gyms, where do you do these workshops? Yeah. So I like to do them at local businesses a lot. I've done these at tech companies, you know, local, you know, service businesses here. I've done it at like marketing companies. I did it at a florist shop one time, which was, you know, probably the most unique workshop I've ever done, is we did like, deadlifting technique and hinging technique with buckets full of water, because they're carrying these like big buckets full of water with flowers around all the time, and they all get hurt their back because they're basically carrying slosh pipes around, right? I was like, holy crap, this is really hard. So we spent an hour going over like hinging technique and breathing bracing control work for these people that worked at this floor shop so they wouldn't get hurt. And there's only six of them. And I, you know, I was like, yeah, I'll teach wherever. And this lady was just a member of the gym that I was at. So local businesses can be a really good one. But you know, if you're looking at, okay, how do I make sure I'm doing the right thing? I think the easiest thing to do, and this is obviously like just directly goes hand in hand with our coaching program, is just do follow the actual, you know, workshops that we taught hundreds of and refined. And this is where I get angry with sometimes with people that we work with, because I'm like, dude, did you change this shit? Because you're telling me it didn't work. And I know that you did something different than what we said to start with. If you just do the stuff we started with, I'm telling you, it's just been refined over years and years and it works. So if that's something you're looking into, you know, to improving, I would recommend starting there, because we can really kind of collapse time for you and narrow the learning gap. Where a lot of people are like, oh, I think people will like if I do, you know, hey, I'm going to do a stability motor control workshop. Don't do it, because people don't know what the hell it is. They don't care. Yeah. It's really not about what you think people want. It's about what makes them realize that you can help them. That is what a workshop is for.
Yeah. And you don't know what you don't know, right? Like, we did all kinds of workshops until we landed on these workshops that we know were valuable and effective and get people in the door, you know. And like, the bottom line is, you know, if you want to take a very high level look at where and what you should teach, is who's your perfect patient?
Yeah.
Who's your avatar? Do you even know what that means? Have you created that avatar? What does that look like? Right. Where do they congregate? Right. So like, these are the kinds of things and the skills that you need to know in order to answer those questions. Right. I want my perfect patient in the door. Where are they? For us, it was in CrossFit gyms when we first started. Now it's in a multitude of places, right? Like, you know, we've done it at corporations. We've done it at, you know, like you said, we did it at Charleston Water, right? Where like, that's literally who the people who go, it was factory workers, right? And like, people out in the field, as well as people who are in offices, right? And like, that was an awesome workshop. So
yeah. Well, I think that's also an interesting sub niche of business as well. Like, we have people that we work with in our mastermind group that do quite a bit of corporate like health and injury prevention. And damn near every single time, it stems from them doing some sort of education with the business or the owner, or, you know, some sort of executive that works there. And all of a sudden, like, you're in. And this is what you don't know, right? Like, you don't know who's there. You don't know who these people are or who they know. And, you know, we got linked up. One of the workshops I did, I actually did it at this Orange Theory. There was one guy that showed up, and I think he was just finishing a class. I think he just stuck around because he felt bad for me, because I was standing there and there was like nobody staying, right? And so this guy stayed, and I was like, dude, I'm going to give this guy the best hour of his life as far as, you know, this stuff goes. And we went over all kinds of stuff. He's a mess. He came in to see me. Turns out this is one of the like most highly connected realtors in the entire city of Atlanta. He'd been doing it for like 50 years, and he was trying to, he found this time capsule that I guess he like buried at his parents' house. His dad died. And so he found it and he wrote it when he was 18 years old. And so one of the things on there for him was to run a marathon, and he hadn't done it. So he's like, I got to do this, right? So he ended up working with me for like at least 2 years. Not that he was working for 2 years to run a marathon, but just 2 years solid before we moved our office over to a different side of town. And the amount of people he sent me is crazy. Is just like, he's probably to date the number one referral source we've ever had, because he knew everybody. And this was from a workshop I thought was a bust, but this guy was super, super connected. You know, I took what I thought was a negative, just tried to make it as positive as I could. And that guy ended up really, in a lot of ways, supporting our business more than anybody, you know, that we've really, really worked with. And we're very thankful for him to, you know, have done that. So you don't know who's there. And I think you got to keep that in mind, right? Like, you just don't know. And so you got to every single time treat everybody like they're literally the most important person in the city that you're in. And if you do that, you know, you're going to get tons of people that are going to come your way, because you're just treating people the right way.
Yeah. Perfect. We got another question. I'm going to run it at you. You ready?
Yeah.
Cool. Krista says, how do you initiate the offer to gyms/businesses to come in for workshops?
Yeah.
Follow up with them with an email after meeting them. I just have one thing.
Go ahead.
I'll let you go after it too, right?
Go ahead.
We got a lot for this. But
we love these. Yeah. So if you have questions, ask us. This is actually like our favorite part because, you know, we have done a lot. We want to share it with you as much as we can. So I know you got a lot to say on this.
So how would you, Krista, try to get a second date? How would you go about doing that? Would you send an email to say, hey, can we go on a second? I mean, maybe that's how the kids do it nowadays. I don't know, right? But the long answer is, or the short answer is, you need to nurture that relationships, right? Like, you've got to get in there, you know, and have the conversation. Like, get in there and talk to them and nurture the relationship. And sometimes that's being direct, and sometimes that's playing a little bit of the long game. Like, part of it is emotional intelligence, right? So yeah, go ahead. What you got?
That's great. I just have like I got this image in my head of you like emailing Amy to see if she wants to go to TGI Friday or something like that for a second date. But
love that place. Great Long Island iced tea.
Amazing appetizers. Anyway, what I would say to this is, number one, you really have to lead with what's going to help them. Okay. So one of my favorite angles with gym owners is to position it as a value add to help them retain clients. So you have to realize businesses need money. Okay. That's a really simple concept, but the more money that they have, the happier the owner typically is. The less money that they have, the more frustrated and stressed out that they are. So in gyms are a recurring revenue business. So you could do the math on this, all right? And this is how I would set these up for people. And I didn't even know this was the right angle to take, but it just seemed to work whenever I would do it. And for me, I would always bring up like, hey, we teach these workshops where we teach your members at your facility how to take care of themselves so that they're not hurt as often. They stick around more, they can hit their health and wellness goals and, you know, lose weight, gain muscle, whatever it might be. And oh, by the way, continue to pay their membership rate because they're not hurt and leaving. Now, that's one of the strongest, you know, kind of positions you can take with a gym owner, because if you can legitimately keep their people in the door, churn it, they know if they're any good at what they do in terms of running that gym, they know exactly their churn rate, how many people are losing every month, how many they're gaining. And if they are losing more than they're gaining, they're going the wrong direction. Injuries are one of the main things that kicks people out of gyms. They want to be there for the most part. If they get hurt, they get frustrated. They end up going and doing things that are unhealthy for them. Maybe they never end up back there. And so for us, when we can lead with that, like, hey, we're going to keep your people healthier. They're going to stick around. They're going to keep paying you. They're going to keep hitting their goals. They're going to be happier. They're going to send more people your way. It's a win-win. You know, we get a chance to come in and teach this stuff to your folks, and we think we can help them. So that's the angle that I would typically take. With businesses, you can do something similar as well. Now, they're not a recurring revenue thing, but, you know, for people that are desk-based, like they're stuck at a computer or something like that, you can talk about, you know, decreasing injuries, increasing satisfaction because they feel healthier. Like, there's so many variables with businesses that makes so much sense for, to where like it, you know, it doesn't need to lead to anything more than that. But to teach a lunch and learn, and normally you can definitely get gyms to pay you to teach that's for sure. But, businesses, it's very easy, to do a paid workshop, because a lot of times they have budgets for that. Lunch and learns, where they have a guest presenter come in. It breaks up some of the monotony. I've gone to this one local tech company like 8 times and done all kinds of different stuff. And, you know, it's more fun for their population. And I've done these on Zoom as well over the last year, whenever you couldn't be in person. So anyway, that's what I would say in regards to, you know, setting those up.
Yeah, we could talk about this, obviously, for hours on end. And I think we covered enough. What do you think? You think anything else we got to touch on before we wrap it up?
No, I think that's it. And to summarize, number one, if you have a local service business, you need a local presence. And if you don't have it, then your employees need to have it. This is a good example. Like right now, I've been to my office like once in the last month, and I haven't done any local stuff. I haven't met anybody locally for anything that has to do with that company. But our staff is heavily involved locally. They do a team workout at a gym every single month. So they all go somewhere together. You know, one of our staff members is really, you know, running the business in a lot of ways now. And he has specific times and days where he's meeting up with people. You know, we have a local podcast like Eve's, they've had theirs for a couple of years. We've had ours for about a year. So we're connecting with people locally that way. So they're heavily involved in it. So if you want to have a local service business, you should have a local, you know, presence. Otherwise, you're really leaving a lot on the table. From there, you know, getting your foot in the door is about establishing value for that other person. It's not about, if you go in with the, you know, mindset of like, oh, well, I've got this degree and this is a certification I have. And like, so-and-so is, was my instructor. They don't care. Like what they care about is like, well, how does this benefit me? You know, are you going to save me time? Are you going to make more money? Or are you going to keep my people happier? If you can do those three things, they'll say yes, basically every single time.
Just got to trust you too, right? That's a big one, right? And sometimes that just takes time. I feel like a lot of people get impatient, yeah. Right? Oh, I met with them once. Why am I doing workshops and seeing all their members now, right? Like, okay, I've worked on people for over a year before, right? Like, and some people we hit it off within like one or two meetings, right? And so some of it is just, again, it's, you know, it's about that nurturing process.
That's a great point, man. And I think with local relationships, the fastest way to get somebody to dislike you is to try to get them to like you faster. Mm-hmm. That is literally the greatest way to ruin a relationship. Like, hey, hurry up and like me. That doesn't work. Think about that with just like relationships in general. It just doesn't work. Like give yourself, you know, a year goal, give yourself a 1,000-day goal of, you know, building these up. And I think that's the thing to keep in mind too. If this is what you want to do for the rest of your career, why are you so worried about hurrying and trying to get this to work faster? You know, if like, if you're struggling with some of this stuff, that's just part of the process. That's so you can learn it better. That's so that you can like know what not to do, which in many cases is just as important. So, you know, give yourself long runways, give yourself, obviously give yourself goals, hold yourself accountable to these things, track your important key indicators, all that. But like, dude, if this is what you want to do forever, why are you so worried about like somebody not liking you fast enough in a week? It's, you got a long time to play this game.
And you know, I built the marketing trident, right? So like definitely if you're looking, because this is a skill, right? And you know, I've been thinking about this a lot lately, and this is something Danny and I talk about, right? You need to acquire this skill, right? And there's no cheat code for it. It's basically committing to the lifelong process of being better as a human, right? And in this case, like going out there and pounding the pavement and doing local marketing. What you need is probably just a game plan, right? You just need an idea of like where and how I need to attack this problem. I think that's where a lot of people get stuck. And I really feel like, you know, a lot of our content and the stuff that we talk about is specifically geared towards that. I just want you to get started. You know what I mean? Like there's nothing I like more than hearing about people who've just started their practice. It's the best thing. Maybe hiring people. That's even maybe a little
or
bit.
Or quitting better. their full-time job to go. Yeah. Like that's my, I feel like a bell should ring every time that happens.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, we can have obviously a team member reach out, right? And like give you that marketing trident, get the process started, start pounding the pavement now, just comment leads and let's get started today, man. Like it's the time, I'm telling you, it's never been freaking easier, right? Like people are just crushing. It's blowing my mind to hear about these. And I don't want to use this to paralyze people, but it's worth highlighting having $80,000 months. You know what I mean? Like, dang, you know,
and practices.
Yes. It's crazy, right? And not, this isn't a 10-year company. This is like a 2 to 3 year old company. Like, you know what I mean? And like 10K is just like happening across the board with frankly minimal effort. And like, I want, if this is something you want to do, man, it's do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. I see these and we highlight these, you know, on social media and we try to share some of these and we block out people's, you know, names because we don't want you asking them for a loan. But like, these are real people all over the country that are, you know, that they're winning. And what's been interesting to watch is, yes, for sure. It was a bit of a difficult year last year. I mean, not a bit, it was a difficult year for many people, on the business side. But what we saw was by the summer, things have bounced back, you know, considerably in most markets. Bigger cities were slower. But what we're seeing now, beginning of the year, so many of our businesses, it's like every business we work with is hitting monthly PRs right now. People are looking to get back into you know, clinics like this, they're looking for more individualization. You know, they're very time sensitive. They have more money. You know, there's never been more money in the economy in history. You know, we just printed $6 trillion more of it, right? So people are looking for ways to spend it, reinvest it, all kinds of things. And, you know, what we at least want to share with you is the reality of what is going on, the reality of what it takes, you know, the reality of the skills you need to acquire. And I'm sorry if some of them are boring. You know, if some of those aren't as cool as we, maybe we should be better marketers, but it's just, we're just trying to tell you the truth of what it takes. But the truth is also it's fucking working really, really well for hundreds of businesses that we've had a chance to work with all around the country and world for that matter. We have a group in Canada that is killing it. They just did 50 grand. They're like seventh or eighth month in business. And they're in a socialized medical country. So it's free.
They're in a gray zone. They're completely locked down.
Yeah, like, yeah, that's right.
We're in March. They're still like we were last March. It's been like that the whole time, and they still are hitting this.
Wow.
Hustlers, by the way, they're some of my favorite people.
Yes, we love Canadians, but the thing is, it's happening all over the country, all over the world, in countries where you think it would even be harder in many cases. So if you're on the fence, you know, hopefully this inspires you to some degree to take action, to do what you want to do, you know? And I think now is a really interesting time from what we've seen where things are, you know, it's an interesting combination of economic rebound. Healthcare is just gets worse and worse every freaking year. Like it just gets so hard to deal with and so intrusive on your time. You're fighting with your insurance company. You're fighting with a hospital, you know, or just whatever. You're like, what is this bill? Like, do I pay this? Do I not? You spend 2 hours on the phone with Blue Cross trying to figure out what's going on. It's a huge waste. You know, we can make this simple. We can streamline it. We can actually help people get back to what they want to do. And the net effect of that is massive. It's massive. And it's not about the business supports our ability to help people. That's it. And that's what's so cool about what we get a chance to do. So, you know, if you're on the fence and it's something that you've been thinking about doing, or you dipped your toe in the water and you're side hustling and you don't know if you can make it work, or maybe it's just you and you don't have to go past yourself, you can. I'm telling you, it's happening all over the country, all over the world.
Great stuff. That's why I got to stop. I could just keep talking. I'm going to stop.
That's it. Well, we will leave it at that. So, all right, guys, thank you so much for watching, for listening, for your questions. We really appreciate the interaction. We love getting a chance to answer what you got. Like we said, if you guys are interested in getting, you know, some organization around your marketing, things that we focus on, type leads in the comment. We'll drop a message in there. One of our team members will shoot you the resource. And other than that, Eve, anything else?
I'm good, man. Yeah. If you don't want to start your practice, we have plenty of practices hiring, by the way. Like we can't even find PTs to jump in there, right?
That's true. We may hire two people this month, just to put that out there as well.
We will too this year, one or two people, but bottom line. And there's at least four practices looking that in our group.
Yeah. And look, all we're doing is saving. We're just saving great clinicians from a shitty existence in a corporate PT environment. It's our favorite thing to do. Just come over to the other side. You don't even have to start a business. You get to work with cool people and see less of them and make just as much, if not more money. It's a great trade-off. So anyway, if you're looking for a job, hit up Eve. if you want to start a practice, let us know. And if you want to scale it, we can help you with that as well. So guys, as always, thanks so much for watching and listening. We'll catch you next time.
See ya.
Hey, real quick before you go, I just want to say thank you so much for listening to this podcast, and I would love it if you got involved in the conversation. So this is a one-way channel. I'd love to hear back from you. I'd love to get you into the group that we have formed on Facebook. Our PT Entrepreneurs Facebook group has about 4,000 clinicians in there that are literally changing the face of our profession. I'd love for you to join the conversation, get connected with other clinicians all over the country. I do live trainings in there with Eve Gigi every single week, and we share resources that we don't share anywhere else outside of that group. So if you're serious about being a PT entrepreneur, a clinical rainmaker, head to that group, get signed up, go to facebook.com/groups/PT Entrepreneur, or go to Facebook and just search for PT Entrepreneur, and we're going to be the only group that pops up under that name.